south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Naturally, when you come down here to Latin America, you're going to buy or you're going to rent. Hopefully, you're going to rent at least for 6 months. That's always the best of recommendations. And you know, I don't care how great, how fantastic, or how earth-shattering those real estate deals seem. The bubble's here, and it's gonna burst. As you know, I've been talking about this real estate bubble that's been inflating little by little for the past 4 or 5 years. And you know, people still ask me why. Gringos who've been down and have seen it for themselves say, don't they see this bubble? Well, I always tell people, no. They're not at all aware of the real estate bubble that blew in the States in 2008. And the average Latin, even the way above average Latins, never followed that news unless it was in Spanish. And even then, they didn't get it. And the fact is, no one alive down here in Latin America, except for the case of Argentina, even knows what a real estate bubble is. You have to sit down and explain it to them, but it's futile. They don't want to hear about it. It's like trying to explain a punch in the face to someone who's never had one before. So remember, in the 20 Latin American countries, there's only one exception. That's Argentina. Most people 40 or over have been through that trauma a couple times, which is why the smart ones put their money in banks where? Uruguay. Which is great for Uruguay when Argentina's hitting the skids, but when Argentina's on the grow, Uruguay takes a big hit. But you knew that already, right? Anyway, staying loosely with the real estate theme, let me ask you the $60,000 question. What do you think the number one gringo expat complaint is once they move into a house or an apartment? That is, besides the fact that during the rainy season, there are always leaks. So what is it? What do you think is our number one complaint? Well, I'll tell you what the number three complaint is. Most houses and apartments are designed like dungeons. And unfortunately, when rooms are dark and dingy like that, that's an invitation to mold and humidity. Latin builders and architects just don't know how to light the interior of a building naturally. And by the way, Latins always undersize their lamps and light fixtures too, so even when they do turn on all the lights, it seems like you're living in a parking garage. Now it's true, when you're driving around, you'll see a lot of houses with domos on them. That's domo. That means a Lexan or acrylic skylight dome. In fact, in Latin America, they rarely use flat plain glass for skylights. Why? Because Lexan and acrylic domes can take a beating. They can take a hit a lot better than a piece of glass. So it's true, as you're driving along, you'll occasionally see these domes or domos on people's roofs. But still, they're usually way undersized and there's never enough of them. So if you're in a house like that, maybe the living room will have a little skylight or two. But the rest of the house? Dark and dingy and almost always plagued with moisture and mold problems. And that, in turn, invites all manner of bugs and creepy crawlers. And remember, down here, those things are on steroids. So just a tip, if you're going to build, put in as many skylights as possible, that is, domos, which will provide plenty of daytime light and, in the rainy season, help burn off that moisture and humidity. So why don't more people use skylights? Well, they're expensive, to Latins that is, not to us. In fact, they're rather cheap. And secondly, in time, they all manage to leak. Now, I'm not saying that from day one, they start leaking. Again, it's details, details. They never seem to have a nice, tight, flush fit. Instead, they glop silicone all over the place. Maybe it'll take a year or two, but eventually, there'll be a nice puddle on your living room or kitchen floor. So, if you move into a new house or a new apartment, that's something you might not notice for a long, long time. Therefore, it won't be your number one complaint. By the way, for all you wannabes and gonna-bes looking for a business idea, how about a skylight installer? A gringo skylight installer. Now, that's a novelty. All you have to do is be gringo about it. You know, first world details and all. And give a 10-year no-leak guarantee. Man, that would be a first because, you know, guarantees are not much in a Latin businessman's vocabulary yet. Sure, big first world places like Walmart and Costco and Sears have them. But the average contractor or installer, forget about it. So, have you guessed the number one gringo moving into a house or apartment complaint? Time's up. It's all about the electrical outlets. There isn't a single Latin residence down here, old or new, or even so-called to first world standards, that has near enough electrical outlets per each room. So, that means when you go into a Latin person's house, you'll see all kinds of cheater plugs, extensions, tape, a real Rube Goldberg rat's nest of wires. So you'll see this stuff hidden in closets, behind couches and chairs, and most often right out in the open. It seems that even upscale Latins that have learned to live in luxury accept dangling ugly wires and overloaded wall sockets. No big deal to them, I guess they don't see it. Like a beautiful woman with a big black hair growing out of a mole on her nose. Come on, you know what I'm talking about. Don't you just want to rip that thing out? Now, I remember back in the 60s and 70s, many U.S. homes had that very same problem. Nope, not women with hairy moles on their noses. Though there were a few of them around, usually fresh off the boat, you know? But here, we're talking about vastly overloaded electrical sockets. In fact, there were so many house fires that the local electric company warned us against overloading sockets by amusing the kids with an animated light bulb in TV commercials. His name was Reddy Kilowatt. Remember him? He'd actually sing a song about it. Man, am I dating myself, huh? I mean, let's face it. Back then in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, new electronic stuff was coming online all the time, and there were never enough duplex outlets to go around. And you know, back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, even in 70s, that's how a lot of house fires got started in the States. Because let's face it, one outlet socket per room just doesn't make it. Which is why people, of course, overload the hell out of that socket. And of course, almost all U.S. home construction is stick-built. That is, you know, 2x4s, real wood-clad siding, at least it used to be years ago. And that stuff would go up like a box of matches. That's why in the 60s they rewrote the electrical code, and now the maximum distance between wall outlets is 12 feet. And down here in Latin America, they try to follow first world codes, but no one's inspecting, so you can do what you want. Which is why the majority of bedrooms and such have only one outlet. And it's standard operating procedure to have no outlets in a closet. How's that? So when I walk into a house and see a rat's nest of wires, I think immediately of the lag time effect. And because they use cement, steel, and concrete block construction here, there's not much of a fire hazard because there's nothing to burn when those things get hot and overloaded. And they do get hot, believe me. So steel, cement, and concrete block construction is a good thing, but it also causes big problems if you try to add another outlet box. Worse yet, an aftermarket skylight or two. Problem is, you have to get a guy in with a hammer and a hardened steel tip to blast away whether it's punching a hole or making a channel for the cable. So even though that steel, block, and concrete construction is really good as a deterrent to earthquakes and such, I know of few gringos, even the most ardent do-it-yourselfers, who will take on that kind of work. I mean, really, why risk your knuckles, your hands, your eyes, and your lungs when you can pay a guy $15 a day to do that kind of work? I mean, that's what they do. That's part of an electrician or a maintenance man's work. So then you might ask, if electrical outlets are truly that much overloaded in houses and structures down here, they must be melting, burning up, and popping circuit breakers all the time. Well, yes, exactly. But with the concrete, steel, and cement construction, nothing ever burns down. Or almost nothing. Which I suppose in a way is why average Latins, even above average and wealthy Latins, don't add extra outlets the correct way. Instead, they overload the ones they've got. Oh, by the way, they do have fire departments here in Latin America, and yes, houses, even whole neighborhoods burn down, but it's always in extremely poor areas, where people build their tin shacks with wooden 2x4 supports, along with scraps of particle board and plywood and such. And remember, most of these people are cooking with wood, so there's a fire going all the time. And their kids are always blowing off firecrackers and cherry bombs, too. Yes, it's true, it seems the world over, young boys would rather blow up things than eat. When I was a kid, I had the same sentiments. In fact, young boys the world over like nothing better than a good fire, too. Sometimes I still feel that way. So just keep in mind that in the lower middle class and poor neighborhoods, dangerous electrical wiring practices prevail and nobody seems to follow any kind of code. And also note that your maintenance guy can do a lot of electrical work, but he doesn't know code either. He just kind of copies what he's seen being done around him. So do tell him exactly what you want and how you want it. Oh, and when you hire a bona fide electrician, he can say he's a bona fide electrician all day long. Who knows, he might even have a business card to that effect. But there's generally no professional organization checking on that stuff either. So down here it's word of mouth, buyer beware, or look on OLX.com, remember? That's that Craigslist, Latin American style, that I mentioned on the last show. Oh, and to digress on that a bit, just got an email from Bob saying that if you put in OLX.com in the States, you'll get OLX.com in the U.S. You won't get it anywhere else, even though it exists in almost all Latin countries, even in some European countries in the U.K., by the way. So if you're looking to get the OLX.com for the country of your choice, just put it in your search engine start page, OLX.com, and the country you're looking for, whether it's Colombia or Peru, whatever. Oh, and by the way, one of my newest friends from my latest Expat Wisdom Seminar, Jerry, asked, how much can you really negotiate with the people selling stuff on OLX.com? Or is their price pretty much fixed? Like, for example, if you're looking for a car. Well, here's a good tip. Suppose you're looking for a compact car on OLX.com and you see there's a list of maybe 300 cars. Just go back in time because they're all set up by date when they were entered. Note that the longer a car's been up there for sale, the more flexible the guy's going to be with his price. Naturally, huh? Now, note, a guy who's just listed his car today or maybe yesterday, he's probably going to be pretty firm on his price because the offers haven't come in yet. He hasn't had enough tire kickers to come in and beat his price down. Oh, and by the way, on OLX.com, when something gets sold, it generally will get flagged as sold. Nope, it doesn't disappear from the site right away, but at least you don't have to waste your time checking it out. But I digress. Okay, one last thing about electrical wiring down here. Like I said, most houses are 99% concrete, steel, and concrete block, making it very difficult to retrofit electrical boxes and outlets and such. So, as usual, Latins will take the easy way out, and they'll go to the hardware store and buy some lamp cord, that's lamp wire, usually the cheapest and thinnest they can get because they know nothing at all about wire size and current carrying capacity. So they'll buy 18, 20, even 24-gauge lamp wire and try to use it as an extension cord for any electrical appliance. Doesn't matter to the average Latin. Cheaper the better. They'll use 24-gauge wire, which is the diameter of a nose hair. Then they'll attach a two-prong plug to it, stick it in a socket, and run that wire 10 or 20 feet to a badly installed surface mount electrical strip, or even use it to power or try to power a refrigerator. Now, to us gringos, when we first see this kind of stuff, it looks dangerous and really ugly. 110 volts running through a tiny little lamp cord to a badly mounted outlet box with about five separate things plugged into that. In our minds, it's not only carny and white trash style, it's dangerous. Which always makes me wonder why more little Latin rugrats aren't electrocuted, because these dangling cords are always within a crawling kid's reach. And of course, young kids like that are always sucking their hands and gnawing on things. Yet, you just don't read or hear about kids getting electrocuted. Yet, if you ask any Latin person about electric shocks, every one of them will tell you personal stories on that count. So I guess it really is true. If it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. Another thing. You know, in the States, by code, you have to have ground fault interrupters in your bathroom and in your kitchen anywhere there is water. You know, they're called GFIs and have a built-in circuit breaker and a reset button. You won't see those in kitchens and bathrooms here in Latin America. Oh, you can get them all right at the electrical supply stores and Ace Hardware, etc. But no one's got them, it seems, except four-star hotels. Electricians don't install them because, well, again, no one wants to spend the extra money and there are no inspectors, etc., etc. Talk about lag time, huh? So my advice? Have them installed in your kitchens and bathrooms. They're great. And by the way, since so many Latin homes, even some of the newer ones, don't have that green earth grounding wire, that means they're set up like U.S. homes were in the 30s, 40s, 50s, even 60s. You know, back in the day when outlets only had two holes in them for two prongs on each appliance. In other words, no earth ground at the receptacle. Well, that means in many cases, if you ever did want to install one of those ground fault interrupters, it needs to be connected to earth ground internally, so it probably won't work right. Which again makes you wonder why you don't read about people getting electrocuted down here. Just so rare. Okay, moving on, I've been asked by a number of people over the last couple of weeks about what's happening in Guatemalan politics, since up in the first world, stories are actually bleeding through, talking about how there's some kind of massive political corruption case going on. Okay, for everyone who is wondering what the hell's going on, let me try to explain this. First of all, note that every single Latin American government is as corrupt as it possibly can be. In fact, it's often said the real road to riches for any lazy-ass slug here in Latin America is to become a politician, and that's certainly true. Sound familiar? If you're elected to or appointed to anything, it becomes a vehicle for full employment for your entire family and your friends and relatives too. Not only that, if you're an upper-level functionary, it's a license to steal millions. Which is why, right before election time, a certain number of politicians and candidates are actually bumped off. That's how serious it is. When you're in, you're living like a king in a different world, and when you're out, you're nothing, which is why so many candidates will kill to get the job or stay in office. And even when the corruption cases are international, in other words, money laundering, trafficking with narcos, and outright theft of millions, when it involves massive corruption all the way to the highest levels, often the scumbags will get prosecuted in their own courts, but they'll get off. Because you see, by that time, they've stolen so many millions, they can hire the best team of lawyers money can buy. Not only that, down here, Latin lawyers can postpone court appearances indefinitely for years. And of course, these crooks always get out on bond. They've got millions, so they can afford whatever the judge says. Not to mention if the political criminal's very high up, let's say a vice president or a president, the judges and actual Supreme Court judges will owe their very jobs to this guy or his party, which is why almost all big government crooks get their cases dropped due to, quote, insufficient evidence, unquote. So that said, what makes the present Guatemala corruption case so interesting and worth international coverage? Well, first, a little history. Guatemala had a 35-year civil war that ended in 1996. Now, the civil war was all about the fact that the usual scumbag politicians and military discovered there were very rich mineral deposits and very valuable agricultural land up in the northern part of Guatemala, way out in the boonies and off the beaten track. The landowners up there were poor indigenous farmers. So it was basically a big land grab by the wealthy oligarchs, the military, and the politicians. Anyway, during that 35 years, the people in power and the military, instead of going after the land legally and paying these people for it, started simply taking it and disappearing whole villages in the process. So then in 1996, the UN came in and brokered a peace deal, and it worked. And how did it work? Well, they paid everyone off, as usual. Do-gooder countries like the US and Japan and Finland and Thailand and Sweden all donated countless millions, even billions of dollars to the locals here, all in the efforts to restore peace and rebuild the country in an equitable way. And of course, the UN didn't want the responsibility of doling out that money, so they gave it to the politicians to dole it out accordingly. And the peace agreement also gave amnesty to all those military guys that committed the genocide. Cool, huh? And with all those billions floating around, all the upper-level military and political boys got rich. And those poor indigenous farmers, well, they got their land back, but they didn't see a cent. They still go down to the river and wash their clothes. A lot of their houses aren't electrified, and almost none of them have clean running water in the house. So it's a case, once again, of meet the new boss, same as the old boss. So when the peace accords came, billions flowed in, and a lot of it was unaccounted for. Well, it was accounted for. It was in the pockets of the politicians, etc. And by the way, all those former military guys that were in on the genocide, they got amnesty, so now they wear suits, and they're deeply involved in the political system now and hold very high positions in government. Anyway, the fly in the ointment was the peace accords came with a hitch. Since 1996, the United Nations has had a presence in the country, monitoring what's happening up north where, you know, the land grabs were, and trying to keep an eye on where all that donated money was going. Anyway, as it turns out, by 2006, about 10 years after the war ended, the United Nations team that was down in Guatemala, called MINUGUA, by the way, they uncovered evidence that the state institutions of Guatemala had been thoroughly infiltrated by crooks. The way they put it officially was it had various black elements, including members of illegal security forces and clandestine security structures. In other words, a black government within a corrupt government. And they reported there was no transparency in government and that the judicial system was an utter failure. So the United Nations approached the president of Guatemala at that time and offered to give assistance to help the failed judicial system eradicate and prevent the reemergence of clandestine security structures and illegal security forces of the kind that started that 35-year war in the first place. So the president and Congress of Guatemala, as thoroughly corrupt as they were in 1996, when approached by this UN commission called CIGIG, the Commission Against Government Impunity in Guatemala, well, the president and Congress of Guatemala signed on to it, even though they were thoroughly corrupt themselves, because all international eyes and pressure were on them, and they wanted to appear as if they were thoroughly cooperating and were on the up and up. Meaning, for the last 9 years, there's been this UN commission consisting of an international panel of highly regarded first world judges and investigators looking to uncover clandestine black organizations working within the government. In other words, they're trying to find out who's stealing all the dough. In fact, the commission came out and said that from 30 to 50% of all the money collected by the Guatemalan government for whatever, tariffs, taxes, gas taxes, import taxes, and the billions they get in donations every year from do-gooders, they say 30 to 50% of all that is stolen through government corruption. They said none of the public hospitals have to be without water or medicine or electricity. None of the public schools have to be without desks and water and electricity and books and pencils. Not only that, they said if the money hadn't been stolen, every single kid in Guatemala could have his own personal computer and every single school could be rebuilt. Now, it's not just pure government theft. There are thousands of no-bid contracts that go out to the cronies of these politicians. In fact, a Guatemalan friend of mine who did some basic campaigning for a guy who eventually, at that time in 2006, became president, he told me a couple of weeks after the guy won, he got a phone call from the party's general secretary saying he'd been awarded a nice, big, fat road maintenance contract. Now, my friend said to the guy, "Well, you know, I didn't bid on that contract and I wouldn't know the first thing about road maintenance." The guy said, "Never mind, this is payback. Take the contract. Hire a couple of guys, get a beat-up pickup truck and some shovels and some rakes and stuff. We'll tell you what section of the country and what roads you'll be maintaining. Don't worry about that, just keep them busy. Oh, and by the way," he said, "open up an SA corporation with some kind of road maintenance name in it, because that's where we'll write the check." And my friend, after the 4 or 5 years that president was in office, built a nice first world house in an upscale subdivision and had enough left over to buy himself a nice SUV. Now, the only difference between that kind of cronyism and the stuff that goes on in politics up in the States, down here we're talking about completely non-transparent, handed out to friends and cronies that often don't know the first thing about how to fulfill the contract that they've just been given. All it is really payback, with public funds, of course. Hey, wait a minute. Isn't that how they do it up in the States, at least in the military? Isn't that how Middle Eastern wars are fought and then countries rebuilt? With non-transparent, no-bid contracts to companies like Halliburton, whose former CEO was that scumbag, what a dick, Cheney. Now get this, there's another guy I know, a Colombian guy. He works for a big company that designs and installs industrial waste treatment systems. And he bid on a gigantic project involving a lot of government buildings that had faulty or even no water treatment systems at all. He submitted his bid and was invited, along with some other bidders, to a meeting salon at a 4-star hotel in order to listen to a presentation by 7 or 8 high-end government guys and a government lawyer. He said that the group of bidders were told right up front that whoever got the contract would have to kick back 20% to them. And he said they announced that without any reservations or shame. Just business as usual. Now he says, a couple years later, he wishes he would have recorded that. Would have been great evidence for what's going down in Guatemala right now. Now, you remember that United Nations committee I told you about that's been investigating government impunity in Guatemala for the past 9 years? Well, 9 years has gone by and almost nothing has happened. They haven't opened their mouth about pretty much anything. Oh, they caught a few small fries, but never any high-end politicians. And naturally, after 9 years, people on the street were starting to think that this UN commission was pretty useless. Well, about 2 months ago, right when their commission was about to expire, they came out with a bombshell. They'd been collecting cell phone conversations between some of the highest players in government and discovered a huge corruption ring that was stealing $5 million a week from the Port Authority, that's import-export. They've got conversations they've been playing directly on the TV news where cabinet members and the vice president's personal secretary are talking about how they're divvying up the money from the president on down. So, bottom line, they've uncovered a ring they call La Linea, the line, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. Because, you see, at the same time, within the same month, there was a huge, unprecedented crisis in the public health system in Guatemala. It turns out, the Minister of Health, the cabinet member in charge of the public healthcare system, who, in collusion with the government's buyers of hospital medicines and supplies, had knowingly purchased drugs and medicines that were counterfeit, directly contributing to the deaths of over 100 hospitalized people, including many renal dialysis patients. Because, you see, they also purchased old, defective renal dialysis machines. Now, they bought this low-grade defective stuff because they didn't have enough money to fulfill the original contract. Why? The funds were skimmed by these same guys and thus came up short. Meanwhile, the vice president's secretary is a fugitive from justice. And when they searched his house in Guatemala City, they found between $2 and $3 million stuffed in a sofa. Remember, this is the secretary to the vice president of the country. And now Guatemala's only lady vice president is sitting in jail. Now get this, just in the last month, the president's entire cabinet resigned and they fled the country. Some went to Panama, some to Cuba, the Dominican Republic, and parts unknown. The ones accounted for, by the way, have checked into beautiful five-star resorts. Surprise, surprise, huh? And for once, every social segment of the population is up in arms. In fact, last week, the entire private business sector of the country called for a one-day shutdown, and the whole country was at a standstill. And they're threatening to do it again and again until the president resigns or Congress impeaches him. Tens of thousands of people outside Congress pressured them so that they've removed the president's immunity and he will stand trial. Now, the strangest thing is that his own party, who hold a majority in Congress, and who are totally in his corner because they're just as corrupt themselves, they voted under severe international pressure and heavy, heavy pressure from all the locals and all the civic groups and business groups to start the impeachment process. This time, the public is extremely pissed off. In fact, the First Lady, the president's wife, cannot go out in public because people throw tomatoes, garbage, and even poop in her face. Most are saying it's a big improvement. Oh, and by the way, the president's son, who, before he became mayor of a completely dysfunctional city in Guatemala called Misco, a place I never recommend gringos step foot in, before being mayor, he was a lieutenant in the Guatemalan army, and he never made over $1,000 a month. Now, isn't it funny? A Latin friend of mine who has a business in Misco tells me the president's son, the mayor of that town, has two new Maseratis and a new Corvette. But guess what? It's not going to last. He's going to trial, too. So then how does all this affect expat gringos? Not much, really. We came down here fleeing a very corrupt political regime, as opposed to down here where the politicians are thoroughly corrupt, but they don't have much power over the people at all. In fact, most gringos don't know, nor do they care about local politics. Most expats, no matter what Latin country they happen to be in, have learned how to divorce themselves from the vile stench of politics.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture. He knows.